At this time, I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker. He is one of our very own. He's a home group member here, and his name is David. Please give him a round of applause.
All right. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure to be asked to speak. I don't think I was, you know, I think I'm a fill-in, but I'll still, feel special for it, Steve. No, but, my sobriety date is June 10th of 2020, and that's my second sobriety date, which I'll go into a little bit later. But yeah, I'll just start from the beginning. So I'm the youngest of six kids, and we grew up kind of like, maybe like lower middle class. We always kind of had, like, we always had food on the table, but it's just a lot of mouths, you know. And I grew up in a very small town of Arizona, and I mean, you can imagine it. It was super close to a nuclear power plant, and like, it was just dirt roads and like trailers, you know. And that was kind of like, you know, where I grew up the majority of my young life. Let's see. Usually, you lose your train of thought at least once in the beginning, and that just happened. But yeah, so both of my parents are alcoholics, and they're actually sober and in the program. So I actually never saw my parents drink. There wasn't any alcohol in the house. You know, it was pretty like normal upbringing. You know, and I guess the disease, and I don't blame my parents for me being alcoholic by any means, but it definitely, you know, the apple did not fall, you know, far from the tree. And for the longest time, I tried to like claim that I was maybe unique, and you know, I could handle the drink where others couldn't. But you know, that just wasn't the case. So it didn't skip any of us, any of the kids. I actually have three siblings who are sober and in the program, so that's been like really cool. But anyways. Like I said, grew up in the desert. There's not really much, you know, fun things to do. My earliest kind of memory of like, you know, childhood was I would try to like fake that I was sick so that I wouldn't have to go to school. For whatever reason, I was just like an anxious, fearful kid, which is probably normal. But, you know, I didn't really want to go to school. And when I got there, you know, I always felt like I just had this urge that like something was wrong with me, for whatever reason. You know, I just felt like I didn't fit in. But as soon as I'd get there and get to yapping, you know, I'd feel comfortable and I'd be fine. But on more than one occasion, I remember just like I didn't know what to describe it at the time. You know, but I just was like an anxious kid. I was super anxious, and my way to get around that was to be like the class clown. You know, because if I got everybody laughing, you know, they weren't really like, you know, I didn't think they were judging me or anything. But yeah, so pretty normal childhood. My dad, you know, was sober in the program, and for whatever reason, we moved around a ton. So I grew up in Arizona majority, but I think in either kindergarten or first grade, we moved from Arizona to Maine, which was pretty weird. And then we moved back to Arizona, I think later that year. And we just hopped all around. For whatever reason, and so it was kind of like I always had this feeling that I was like an outsider for whatever reason. And the funny thing was, like, the kids would ask me, like, they started to think, like, with the amount of times that we moved, that my dad was like in witness protection or something, you know. And it's like, no, dude, he's like a roofer, and he's just like nuts, you know, he just wants to move all the time. But yeah, I'm like, he's far from it. But anyways, yeah, so growing up in Arizona, not much to do. I had my little neighbor trailer friend Lucas, and you know, we'd hang out. His parents, you know, he had booze in his house though. So I remember, I don't know, I might have been maybe second or third grade. We, you know, rode our bikes to some like behind a Palo Verde tree or something. We were just hanging out, you know, and he pulled out a beer, you know, a nice warm Bud Light. And I just remember, like, you know, he cracked the top. He took a swig, I took a swig, and I was just like, man, this tastes like urine. I don't like this, you know? I didn't feel the effect. I just tasted it, and I was like, eh, you know, that's not for me. So I kind of just didn't think anything of it. You know, that was my first, I guess, you know, what would it be, you know, introduction to alcohol, but I didn't drink to effect. So I was just like, oh, you know, whatever. Fast forward a little bit, you know, still the uncomfortable kid getting in trouble a little bit because, you know, I'm uncomfortable and I try to, you know, just be the funny guy to fit in, man. So a little bit of trouble, but nothing crazy. And the second time we moved to Maine, I was in seventh grade and, you know, struggling to fit in. They called me a Flatlander for whatever reason. That was like their term for me. They thought I was like from the city, you know, in Arizona. I'm like, dude, I'm probably more country than you guys. They're like, Flatlander, you know? So I'm just like, what the heck? You know, everybody in Maine, if you're not from Maine, you're just a city boy, you know, to them. So then I show up and I'm like, damn, I just want to fit in, you know? I felt uncomfortable. We moved around a whole bunch and I'm like, what the heck? So I proceeded to purchase an Altoids can, probably like a few weeks into being there. It's an Altoids can. I think it was like 10 bucks and it had two joints and a lighter, you know? And I was like, all right, you know, the cool kids are doing it or whatever. I just want to try something. Tried that. Didn't really feel anything. Didn't think anything of it. I met this other friend there, you know, his parents drank. We'd go out, you know, fishing. That was like the thing, you know, if you wanted to get up to no good, you know, they always didn't care if you went fishing. So we'd go fishing and, you know, we'd take nips off of whatever he took from his dad. Still didn't feel the effects though, but, you know, tried it. Didn't really think anything of it. At that time it was, I don't know what type of liquor it was, but it just burned, dude. And I was like, you know, I don't want that. I proceeded to use other dry goods. So really my first, I guess, interaction to mood altering substances was obviously, you know, the dry good portion of it. But it's important to my story because the first time that I actually felt, you know, the head change that occurred when I put something in my body, I'll never forget it, because as soon as I came down, I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, I didn't know how anxious and fearful I really was until I came off of, you know, the substance that I was using. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, I want to feel this way permanently. That would be nice. You know, if I could always feel confident and good about myself and talk to people. So I proceeded to go down that route. And I was saying before the meeting, like every time we moved, I always found like that group of people, you know, that like wanted to do the same things that I did. In the back of my brain, you know, I always gravitated towards the same people that wanted to get loaded, which I'll talk about later on. But yeah, so I followed that path down and got into an altercation my freshman year of high school. So my parents decided, like, hey, this isn't working out in Maine. I think we were there for like 3 years. We moved back to Arizona, this time in a different part of Arizona. It's Wickenburg, Arizona. So it's like horses and just like, not like buggy type horse stuff, but just like Western, man. So we move there. I meet my same like skater friends, of course, who want to, you know, do what I want to do. And, you know, still using other mood altering substances. I get in trouble again, change schools again. And at this point, like, I'm just finding that, like, you know, if I'm not under the influence of something, you know, things don't feel right. And I just feel like, man, I'm like this puzzle piece that just doesn't fit in. You know, I have all the desire to like do good. You know, I played sports and stuff, but all my inhibitions went away when I started to, you know, heavily use things. I will get to drinking, I promise. So yeah, moved around, got in trouble, switched schools. I ended up dropping out of high school when I was 16 and thinking that maybe that would, you know, if I just stay away from these people and in that, you know, maybe that'll help me. Obviously, it didn't work. I did get my GED, though, and the stipulation was, you know, my parents would sign off on it if I would get my GED and then enroll in community college right away. I'm like, all right, I'll do that. So I did that, and I actually stayed dry for a little bit. I was, like, going to school, you know, felt like I had this, like, newfound, you know, independent whatever. I had, like, at that time, you know, had my license and just driving around, going to school, whatever. But it always caught up to me, man. I would, you know, start getting that uncomfortable feeling, you know. I knew what would take that away. So then I started using again. And around this time, I think I was about 17, I started hanging out with another guy that I knew from high school. And his older sister would buy us booze. So my first like real, I guess, you know, drunk was on, man, what was it? It was Mike's Hard Lemonade. And I think it was like, what was the flavor? Maybe strawberry lemonade. I don't know, some sugary, whatever, malt liquor. And I just remember like hating it, you know, sipping it. And I got to about halfway down and I just felt warm and fuzzy. And it was like one of the, I mean, I just got chills up and down my neck thinking about that feeling. Man, I must be an alcoholic. It was that feeling that they described, like I had arrived. I felt like the man, you know? And obviously, the more you drink, the easier it is to keep drinking, you know? And I was like, sweet. Kept drinking. And those, man, those always gave me the worst hangover. So anyways, you know, I felt the effects finally of alcohol. And I felt like Superman. You know, it was a lot different than the other goods that I had used because those would make me, you know, kind of isolate, kind of slow, whatever, you know. I wasn't like a party animal back then. But alcohol, you know, I could talk to people, you know. I was like the life of the party. I had all of a sudden all these like funny jokes, you know, that came out of like nowhere, you know. In one instance, you know, I kept drinking with that guy. There was one instance where it might actually have been that same night. You know, we're drinking, whatever, we go to some gas station, and I had like an idea to walk up to this guy at the pump next to us, or like it was a diagonal from us. I don't know what I was gonna say. I was just, you know, drinking or whatever. I walk up to this guy and then I end up coming back and found, you know, he invited us to a party. So my thought was like, man, when I drink, good things happen. Like I just randomly went up to a dude and found out there was some party and he invited me. He must have thought I was like a good time or something. But anyways, we go there. So alcohol did for me what, you know, I always wanted to feel like, you know, I always felt like I didn't fit in, low confidence, could never talk to girls, you know, but I'd get a buzz on and I would just, you know, it'd be like you set up one of those, whatever those things are, I guess I'm too young, but, you know, and you like wind it and then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, running around like the monkey and stuff. That was me, man. So yeah, you know, my introduction was good things happen when I drink, I'm sociable, whatever. And, but that had a peculiar thing about me where I would get buzzed and I would want to drive, man. It was just like weird. I was into cars, but for whatever reason, I would get a good buzz on and just want to drive. Don't know where, whatever. So, you know, one instance in particular, we were having like a desert party or something. All I remember is turning, I don't know what it was, turning a bottle of something upside down. And I remember waking up in my room to my dad being like, Dave, your headlights are on and you're parked crooked in the driveway. And I kind of like, oh, really? Whatever. And I'm like very, 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 very hungover. I don't even remember. I don't remember driving. I don't remember parking. Don't remember anything. And you could tell he's kind of alarmed. I go out, you know, turn off my lights, go inside, throw up, you know, because I'm super hungover. And he just gave me that look, man, because he's also, you know, he's had the experiences and he was just like, what happened? And for the first time, man, that was like my first experience of like a true blackout. I was just like, I have no idea. And he was just like, Dave, you know, the dad talk. Dave, you can't do that. And then he said, you know, call me if whatever, if that happens and you shouldn't drink like that. It's like, all right, yeah. But that was my first true blackout experience. And that proceeded to happen a lot more. But anyways, I'm kind of messing up. I'm doing this community college thing. I end up graduating community college. And I just have this incessant urge that I need to join the military. Maybe it was like, I thought maybe, you know, geographic here or whatever. So I got into some trouble, like I said before, in high school. So I wrote a letter to the judge. Pretty much saying like, hey, I want to join the service. And I got this on my record. So, you know, I pretty much just asked him to take it off so I could join. And he friggin' did that. So I was like, oh man. Now I didn't even really want to join. I was kind of like one foot in, one foot out. But I just had this urge, man. And like, today I think about it as like my higher power was always there, I think, urging me where I needed to be, even before I even wanted anything to do with them and wanted even sobriety. But that was one of those moments. So I ended up joining, and I did what a lot of people do after they join. I got married after boot camp to a girl that I was dating, And the reason I married her is probably this reason. The first time that I actually hung out with her, I think it was my 20th birthday or 19th birthday, she brought a bottle of something. I don't remember what it was. And she she got blackout drunk and like fell on her face, and I tried to help pick her up, and she swatted my hand away and said, "I'm an independent woman," and just like kept walking. And like in my brain, I was like, "Man, you know, this is the girl." Like, she, you know, it was like, I was like, "Yeah." So, yeah. So I ended up joining a couple years later. We ended up getting married. Long story short, it doesn't work out. Yeah, it lasted probably, I don't know, a solid 4 months. And at that time, after boot camp, I wasn't drinking regularly, you know? Yeah. I wasn't drinking regularly, but I had the isms, man. It was in me. I had experience, you know, abusing substances and alcohol prior to the military, you know, and I joined the military. Well, I still have untreated alcoholism. I didn't know that at the time. So it didn't work out. I get stationed in Boston, freshly divorced in a city like that. You could take the train wherever you want. So that's when stuff really started getting heavy. I tried to manage it. I told myself, you're not going to drink during the week. You're only going to tie one on the weekend. That lasted for a little bit. There was multiple instances where I would tell myself, all right, dude, you're only going to have a couple. You're going to whatever your buddy's house. It's like I knew I was only going to have one or two. If you would have, you know, like some people have said, like if you'd take a lie detector test, I would have passed. I'm only having one or two. I would get that one or two in my system, and it's like a switch would go off. It'd be like, who is the guy who wanted to just have one or two? And I thought in my head that I wanted to, I wanted to drink more. I didn't know that that was alcoholism. I didn't know that was a, you know, phenomenon of the craving. I just thought I changed my mind. You know what I mean? I'm having fun, so I want to keep drinking. That happened time and time again, multiple times, blacking out and making it home, forgetting my keys. Luckily, I had a roommate, you know, knocking on the door at whatever time, just all kinds of things. And what alcohol did is I would get to a point where I'd end up in places I didn't want to be with people I didn't want to be with, is really what happened. I didn't have a moral compass. There was actually, it's part of my story, but I'd go to the medical clinic on base, you know, and there was a pattern that I would do where I would lie to them because I was ashamed, and I'd say, no, you know, I'm trying to be safe, you know, I met a new girl, we're both getting tested, so, you know, just, but I had this pattern where, like, I'd always would need to get tested because I'm living a crazy life, no moral compass, so I was so afraid of what they would think of me, I would lie to them and say, oh, I think my girlfriend cheated on me, you know, that's why I'm getting tested, just to be sure, and sure enough, I have something, you know, because I was so afraid that they would, like, see my high-risk lifestyle and it would affect my work. You know, I had this persona. I was military David, and now I was, like, party animal David, and I had to keep that up. So I would do that, you know, because, you know, I just didn't want to, I was afraid of judgment. So anyways, somehow I, like, rank up, and I had this thing where I could do really well and hold it off for a little bit, and then I would just let go. You know what I mean? I could go to school, I could perform well, you know, but after work was over, you know, that was when I could let, you know, the other David out. So anyways, I get stationed in Baltimore, and in Baltimore, well, south, not in Baltimore, but near there. And there, you know, there's no train system. So now I'm like, crap, you know, I can't just get blackout drunk and hop on a T to get home. I actually got to be careful now. I get there, similar things. I end up in places I don't want to be and with people I don't want to be with. And it gets to a point where I'm driving under the influence. Somehow, that's one of my not yets. You know, I didn't get a DUI. I have a lot of not yets. And early on in the program, that almost kept me out, you know, because I was like, oh, I didn't have that happen. You know, I must not be an alcoholic, a bunch of bull crap. But anyways, I get stationed there. I'm still exhibiting the same behavior. My getting stationed somewhere else, you know, what I found is I take myself wherever I go. So no wonder the problems follow, you know, it's centered in my brain. anyways, I get to a point where I'm miserable. Outside looking in, they're like, wow, squared away dude, you know, he's got an apartment, a car, great job, you know, he must be, you know, doing so well. And inside, empty, depressed, and suicidal. I just was like, it wasn't working, man. I get to the point where I'm in my apartment. I think I have some six pack. You know, it's funny. I told myself that I was like a beer connoisseur, right? I drank IPAs, and it's because they were like 12%. I would lie to myself. I just, you know, I didn't want to drink the Bud Lights because I'd have to drink like 20 of them to get anything going. So then I'd buy the, you know, real strong beer so they'd actually do something. So I had, you know, something like that, some fruity beer, whatever. And I just remember, you know, cracking it, drinking a little bit of it. I might have had one or two. And it just, I just got a pit in my stomach, man. And I was just like, what the F, dude? Here's another six pack. You're definitely going to finish and get wasted. And then what, you know? At this time, I wasn't really going out to drink. It wasn't a club thing like it was in Boston. I was sitting in my apartment, getting drunk, listening to music. I had this other thing where I'd call people. And like today, like I'd call my parents for whatever reason. It's like, dude, not like, like I would just have a conversation with them. And today I'm like, man, they must have been like afraid. Cause you could tell I'm slurring my words and stuff. So, but yeah, so I got to a point where I was miserable, man. And I knew that this just wasn't going to work for me for whatever reason. I thought I was mentally ill or something, man. I just was like restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, unless I drank. And, it just, the solution wasn't working, man. I got to the end, so I called my parents and pretty much told them I needed help or whatever. And they were real strategic. They were good. They wouldn't bring up AA or anything like that or going to get help unless I brought it up. So I bet they were waiting for a while, man, because I wouldn't bring that up. But I brought it up, and I think I just opened that can. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, we can tell them what's up now. Because they're awesome, but... They told me I should go to a meeting, you know, and I'm like crying or whatever because I'm all miserable or whatever. The next day, I show up to a meeting. I think it was a Sunday morning at this place called Shepherd Pratt. I think it was like, I don't know if it's active now, but it was like a mental health facility or something. But you go there, you know, I pull up. It's in the woods of like Maryland or whatever. And I show up there and I'm like, what the hell, man? This is where it's got me, like a mental institution. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I probably would fit in because here I thought I had all these things wrong with me. Show up to my first meeting. A guy named David, believe it or not, gives me my first big book. So that was cool. but I sat there. I wasn't expecting anything crazy. But I had realized that my life was unmanageable. It wasn't working for me, man. And I didn't, you know, have a crazy last drunk, but I sat there and I just tried to listen in. My dad told me, you know, listen for the similarities. He's good. You know, I still think about that today. But anyways, go to my first meeting. I don't feel any lightning bolts, but I do get a big book. Proceed to go to meetings that week. That Thursday, I go to a meeting, an 8 p.m. meeting called Waterloo. And I was good with going to meetings. I'd get there, right? Kind of sit towards the back, scanning everybody. I had this thing where I'd walk into a room and think everybody was judging me. And I would see, lock eyes and see who I didn't like and who I did, who I was better than, who I was less than, you know. And I didn't really realize that at the time, but that was like my whole life, man. I'm either greater than or less than. There was no whatever. And then I had this like, just suspect, like, it's almost like there is a committee up there. And one dude is like always like thinking everyone else is like judging me, man. So of course I go into that meeting and I think everybody, you know, they're looking. What I didn't know is like everybody knows you're a newcomer. You don't usually go to that meeting. I didn't know that then, you know, but you could, you know, I probably stuck out like a sore thumb. Meeting gets over. I'm trying to get out of the building. My back is turned, man. I want to get out. Dude's like, oh, hey, yeah, you. And I was like, shit, man, you got me, man. And, yeah, he's like, my name's Chris, what's your name? I said, David, you know, and he's like, oh, you new around here? And I was like, oh, dude. I'm like, no, I've been here for a little bit. And then, you know, the questions or whatever, you know. I'm like, yeah, it's my first week of meetings. You could tell his like eyes lit up. He's like, sponsor, man, you know. So, yeah, I met that dude. He gave me his number and he said, yeah, he's like, I go to this meeting on Fridays. You should meet me there. I'm like, all right, you know. I'm not going to commit to this guy. I don't want to go to a meeting, you know. But I was like, at that time, I was calling my parents, you know, kind of every night and just whatever, miserable. I'm without a drink, so my solution is gone, you know what I mean? And I'm just like lulling through. So yeah, I go to that meeting. One thing that stuck out to me is a dude remembered my name. I did not remember his name. Now I do because he's my first sponsor, but he walked up to me, shook my hand, and said, "Hey, David," and I was just like, I still think about that. I got a little bit of chills just because, for whatever reason, that just, I don't know, it just stuck out to me. And I was like, "What was your name again?" I didn't remember his name. Anyways, I would have never asked this guy to sponsor me. I thought like asking another man to sponsor me was like, you know, I would relinquish my control. I mean, talk about, you know, an alcoholic, whatever, control freak. You know, so I would have never asked him, and he kept doing, giving me the nudge. You know, I'd go to meetings, whatever, and he'd be like, "Yeah, you got a sponsor?" And I'd be like, "Oh, no, not yet." Whatever. Anyways, the dude pretty much said, "I'd be honored to be your sponsor." You know, after a little while, he just knew maybe I would never ask him. I was just like, "Oh, man, this dude's got me in a corner." I was just like, "Yeah." And after I agreed, I still remember, like, the crazy eye in his look. The crazy look in his eye. And he asked me that question, man. He's like, "Are you willing to go to any length to evict you over alcohol?" And here I'm just like, man, this guy is for real. This is serious, you know? I was like, so I kind of just half-heartedly was like, "Yeah, you know, whatever, you know." But I still remember because, man, he had that look like it was of utmost seriousness, you know? And now I understand, like, this is a disease of life or death. That dude was trying to save my life, you know? But at the time I was like, guys, you know, whatever. So I said, "Yeah." And, we proceeded to meet and read the big book. I started going to meetings. I'll backtrack just a little bit. Well, no, I won't backtrack. This is on par. I get to a point where I'm going to meetings, and we get to the fourth and fifth, right? And I kind of wrote some things down, which I'll go over the steps later, but we wrote some things down, and I'm balking on it, man. I don't really want to work the steps. I'm in pain, but I don't think, what I really thought was, I didn't think it was going to solve all my other problems, you know what I mean? I put down the drink, you know, but is this going to help me with this, and this, and all my anxiety, and this and that, and it's like, you know, I was just not sold on it. Well, I haven't worked all the steps, so no wonder. But I reached the point where, you know, it was suggested I wouldn't date anybody in the first year. I started dating a girl not long into sobriety, you know, and what had happened was I had this ability to make my girlfriend my higher power, you know, and I didn't know that back then, but that's just what I did, you know, and if all my approval, all my satisfaction, validation, you know, had to come from a person because I felt, you know, that I didn't have that inside. So anyways, I reached a point where, I don't have a relationship with a higher power, you know. My higher power is a girlfriend of 2 months. I'm balking on my fourth step, riding it, and I hurt my back, so they prescribed me muscle relaxers. And for whatever reason, man, I took it as prescribed for like 3 days, and then, I don't know, something came up, but what if you take two? And I was like, all right, let's see if that does anything. Didn't really do much. I felt a little sleepy. And then what proceeded to happen is I started to use these muscle relaxers. I was looking for something to change the way that I felt. I knew I couldn't drink because I'd been in these meetings and I'm like, you know, but it was the craziest thing. I didn't think that abusing these muscle relaxers was a problem. I didn't even have a second thought. It's almost like when they talk about, like, you know, there's no mental defense between the first drink. It's like, you know, they didn't even realize they picked up a drink and now they're drunk kind of thing. And I started abusing these, man. And I really abused them, and I actually think I was close to, like, yeah, I was like losing my breath when I went to sleep, and I just shrugged it off, you know. I don't know, but anyways, I was abusing these muscle relaxers, and I was actually on duty, and I reached a breaking point. I knew that I couldn't drink. I had the overwhelming urge to drink, like worse than I've ever felt. And then my immediate thought was like, dude, you can't drink. You know, I had some buddies and stuff. I think I was about 5 or 6 months in, maybe a little bit less. So I had a big urge to drink, and I knew I couldn't drink. And my next thought was like, I'm going to blow my brains out. I can't do this, you know. Totally just spiritually bankrupt, man. And then for whatever reason, I'm getting a little chills right now. I had this like, it like wasn't a thought that I think really came from my head. And I think it was my higher power, and I think it was an experience. I had this thought, it was like, not a voice, but just a thought that came in my head that was like, you need to finish your fifth step. You need to finish your fifth step. And it didn't say it multiple times. It was just once. And it was almost like I had realized at that moment, I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out. And I was miserable and just done with life, man. And it became abundantly clear that I can't have 1 foot in and 1 foot out. I'm either both feet in or I'm screwed, man. I'm either going to, you know, drink or blow my brains out. There's no other thing. So I called my sponsor that day, told him I was abusing the muscle relaxers. So I restarted my date. And obviously around that time, you know, COVID hit and stuff. So it was weird, man. For my first, you know, few months of new sobriety, or even before that, there wasn't any meetings. I didn't know what it was like to go into a room, you know, a real full room of people and like experience a meeting. So a lot of the meetings were like backyard bonfire meetings. You know, my sponsor would take me there to like, you know, house meetings. We had a big book study in my sponsor's house with my grand sponsor at the time and a couple other people. But I got honest, you know, restarted my date, started to continue to do this thing. And it was COVID, so this is a cool thing too. So I had met this younger guy at this meeting prior to the meeting shutting down. I had no intention of ever calling this guy. That was my MO. I'd get a whole bunch of numbers, never call anybody. I'd call my sponsor. That was like the only guy that I called, but I just was unwilling to take suggestions, man. He told me to talk to one person you don't know after the meeting, you know, at every meeting. I didn't want to do that, you know. Call however many, you know, I was so reluctant, man. And I was like, and it's funny because in my brain, I didn't even know how sick I was. I didn't even know. So, and there was a, yeah, so anyways, I met this guy, didn't ever plan on calling him. It's COVID. I need this meeting password. I'm like, really? I'm like, man, I really need to hit this meeting. And I remembered that I met this guy at the in-person version of this meeting. So I try to call him, he doesn't answer. I end up getting the password. I don't even remember what happened. Somehow I got it. Got into this meeting, whatever. He ends up calling me back and I'm like, dang it. So I pick up whatever, I'm like, yeah, man, I just needed the meeting password. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah. Keeps me talking. He was a younger guy, probably with like 3 years of sobriety or something. Anyways, he proceeds to tell me about, you know, there's other young people and we're doing this softball league, you know, do you have any interest? And I, of course, I'm like thinking of excuses. I don't want to play softball with these people. But I ended up kind of committing. So then I knew I had to do it. So anyways, that dude, you know, introduced me to a whole side. It introduced me to the fact that I thought my life was not necessarily over, but going to be super boring being sober and young. And what that guy did is, you know, left to my own devices. I would have never called that dude. So I feel like that was like kind of a higher power moment. One of those like, you know, I don't know, just meant to be things. But yeah, so it introduced me to a whole side of, you know, we're not a glum lot. You know, you could be young, sober, and have an awesome life. You could do the same cool stuff that you used to do when you're drinking. You're just not drinking, you know. And that was like not a concept that I understood. So met some young people. I'm doing the deal. Where was I going with that? This is number two. Usually you get two where you lose your whole train of thought. Yeah, restarted my date. I don't even know where I was at. I proceeded to do some sober softball, but I started to get connected with people who were serious about recovery. It saved my butt, man. It was told to me early on that, you know, now I'm losing my whole train of thought. Jeez. I know I got to get to them steps. That's why I'm like trying to be strategic. But yeah. Anyways, I knew that that you could be young and not have a crappy life. So I started to do that. Obviously, the relationship with the girl early on in sobriety didn't work out. But I was able to start to foster a relationship with my higher power. And that relationship would, you know, save my butt a couple times in later sobriety. About a year sober, I applied for this thing at my job, and it was one of those things where I prayed about it. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna get out if I don't get this, or if I get it, I'll stay. And I prayed about it at about right after a year of sobriety. And in Maryland, for whatever reason, when you get an anniversary, you speak at the meeting. I think that was one of my first times speaking. It does get a little easier, but you can't tell because I'm always nervous. But I get an email or whatever that says they selected me, and I'm like, what the heck? Another higher power moment where, it just assured that this sobriety thing, it was abundantly clear that this, working this program to the best of my ability, is the only way that I'm going to have a happy, joyous life. And there was moments along the way, but that was like one of those other moments where I was like, wow, it was just like when you know you're right where you're supposed to be. So that was cool. Obviously, I accepted it and had to say bye to my first, what I came to know, what was AA. So I get to, they send me to Florida, and I wasn't used to not being able to go to meetings. I either had Zoom or in-person meetings, and I get stationed on a boat, and that first, it was suggested that as soon as you move somewhere, you need to find a new sponsor and a new home group, right? I get there. I don't find a new sponsor right away. I don't find a home group right away. I went to one meeting. It was like a clubhouse or whatever. And I remember I left the meeting like almost in tears because I was like, man, AA sucks here. There was like three people there, and they were like super old. And I was just like, man, this is going to suck. I'm screwed. What am I doing at my new job? All kinds of self-centered fear. And it just like attacked me, man. So I'm going to meetings or whatever. Don't have a, didn't get a sponsor right away. Or pick a home group. We go on our first deployment, and it hits me. So what I think is cool about my relationship with my higher power, call him God for short, so God, is it seems like he, she, or it, whatever, puts me in these positions like strictly for growth. It's like I went to do this job opportunity, and it was like he was poking holes in my program to show me, or their holes were already there, but he's showing me where the water's leaking, where I have to like plug it up. So one of the big holes was my relationship with God wasn't that strong. I relied heavily on meetings. I relied heavily on other people. I'd go do, we drive out on Fridays, go to a meeting. I worked the steps, but I was super dependent on just going to meetings. So I reached a point where there's no meetings to go to on a boat. I got my little tiny big book. I brought some literature. But I was like miserable, man. There wasn't any meetings. I couldn't call anybody. And it was like that, where it talks about in the big book, when people went to war, I wasn't going to war. But, where their relationship with their higher power is what, kept them going. And I just remember after that first deployment, man, I wanted to get loaded bad. I wanted to get loaded real bad. I ended up calling like my first sponsor, made some calls, went to a meeting like pretty much immediately when I finally like got off the boat. Went to a meeting, and obviously I didn't pick up a drink. But I had to get honest with myself that my program wasn't really as good as I thought, and I needed to correct it, before I picked up a drink. So what saved me was calling someone when I had that desire. I called someone, and I'm thankful for that because who knows what would happen. I get a sponsor, and I met him at that same clubhouse, and it just didn't work out. We went through like steps 1 through 5. It just wasn't working out. I changed sponsors, and started doing that. And every deployment that we'd go on, and I'd come back, it would be a little bit better. And what really happened was all the holes that were poked in my program, like I had to get right with my relationship with God. I had to get right with, prayer, meditation, and really like, what are you going to do when you want to drink and there's no one around? The relationship with God is what actually, helped me to stay sober. We'd go to port calls and these dudes are trying to buy me shots. And I had to be like, I had to use one of those jokes. You know, I just said, yeah, I'm allergic, man. They're like, oh, wow, I'm so sorry, the whole breakout in handcuffs. And then they'd laugh, and I'd just, get out of there. But it showed that, working this program, you can go to whole different countries with people pretty much, egging you on to get loaded and be like, nah, I'm all set, man. I'm good. Make it to your rack, not have any problems. So my relationship with God has saved my butt multiple times. And that was just, a handful of them. For a bit there, though, I was super miserable before I got that first sponsor. And there was a period where I wasn't taking an inventory. I wasn't doing the nightly inventory, nothing. And I was full of resentment, fear, and whole kinds of things. I think I went 6 or 7 months without really doing the work and doing the, the nightly inventories. And if you would have told me that, starting to do that would eliminate a bunch of my, resentment, fear, and anxiety, I would have thought you were, it wasn't going to work. I didn't see how a nightly inventory would do that for me. I mean, it's periods of insanity. There's a friggin' bug that's flying around my face. So I started getting right with that. And about 2 weeks later, I'm way less miserable. I'm reaching my hand out, talking to newcomers. For whatever reason, though, I've sponsored guys, but haven't got them, all the way through the steps. There was a couple guys along the way, and it just didn't work out. But I still tried to make the effort to do that. I didn't even talk about any of the steps. But I'm in Florida, and early on, that's what I was going to say before. Now I came back. I remember calling my sponsor and being like, I stopped drinking and my life is worse. And he freaking belly laughed at me through the phone. He was like hysteric. He laughed at me, man. And I was like pissed because I could not believe that I haven't been drinking and I don't feel, loads better. And he's like, dude, you're in the right place. You're an alcoholic, And that was one of the first instances where I was like, dude, wow. No wonder, Yeah, but I just couldn't believe that my life got worse after I stopped drinking. I was under the impression that I just had to stop drinking, and things would, I'd feel better mentally, and that didn't happen. So, so the steps. I'm losing the whole train of thought again. You get 3, it wasn't 2. I've miscounted. I'll just go back to the Florida thing. So anyways, I had to, I got right with God, got a sponsor, and things started to get better. I get orders to here and come here. And the one thing that I did differently is I learned from my experience and the miserability that I had moving in sobriety. I knew that I needed to get a home group, and I knew I needed to get a sponsor as soon as possible. So, of course, I waited a week or two. But not months, it did get better, and I knew that, I needed to do that and to get right with that. So I did that. This is obviously my home group. But just some tidbits of, I guess the good part of sobriety. So I used to think it was super cliche when they're like, life beyond your wildest dreams. I remember being new in the back, yeah, your life is good, you're friggin' retired, You don't have to do anything. I was such a little, if you only knew how unique I was, That was another thing they'd say you're terminally unique. And I was just like, what are you talking about? It's like being terminal. Like you have a terminal disease, you're going to die because you think you're unique. This solution works for anybody who's an alcoholic and is willing to do the work. That's it. There's no, and for the longest time, man, I would have told you that, I just had this or that. But what ended up happening working the steps is it not only solves the problem of, uncontrollable drinking, but it solves the brainstorm that I had that I just thought it was because I was just loony, A lot of my anxiety started to subside. A lot of my fears started to go away, 3.5, whatever years ago, I would not be standing up here. I was like, if I did, it would be a lot worse than this. You can imagine how bad it was. it gave me things that I didn't even really know that I wanted. And there was a point, I think it was shortly after when I did the fifth step, I remember laying down in my bed and just hanging out there, and I just felt like this sort of just like peace, man. I don't know how else to describe it other than I just felt okay. And that was probably the first time I had felt that way. I mean, man, since I was just little. And I'm pretty sure I started tearing up. So that was, yeah, it was like an experience. And I remember that was the feeling I was searching for the whole time with drugs, with alcohol, and it never really did it. I couldn't get the right mixture. Like, I don't know how to, you know, I just couldn't get it right. But that right there was the feeling I was searching for the whole time. It just clicked in my brain. So, you know, I don't always feel like that all the time. You know, obviously, I remember being like, I wanted to chase that feeling, kind of like how I chased the buzz from alcohol, but that's just not how it works, you know? It's like they say, you know, there's not all rainbows and butterflies, like it kind of ebbs and flows, but the goal is to just be not so, like, sine wave, like I was just up and down all the time. The goal is just to try to be, you know, little waves, you know? So it's provided that for me, though, and getting close. Yeah, man, I would have never guessed where I'd be, you know, 3 years ago. I didn't know I needed this solution, and I didn't even know that I wanted it. And today, the biggest change is, you know, my relationship with God was, if things were super bad, got them on speed dial, you know, praying my butt off. I wasn't even religious, but I'm praying, you know. And today, not only when things are bad, but especially when things are good, is when I, you know, just have a little, it could just be something simple as like, thank you, God, this is super sweet, you know, this is an awesome whatever. That's like definitely the biggest change is that right there, you know. I would, when things are good, man, I'd take it right back and I'd get loaded, you know. I mostly like to drink, you know, when things were good. But today, you know, I know that my best thinking got me here. And I know that, you know, the praises or thankfulness, like that goes to my higher power and really the program as well, because, you know, I wouldn't be here. So, I guess wrap it up, you know, you can be young and still have fun in sobriety. And what really gets me when it's red and stuff is it says, you know, your best years are ahead of you. And I still, man, that's like, I could just tear up right now. But the cool part is, like, I didn't even talk about any of the steps. Jeez, I'm just rambling. But my living amends with my parents, like, dude, I don't call them drunk anymore. They're, like, happy to hear from their son. And it's pretty cool, you know, because I have a lot of siblings that struggled the same way I did. And I don't have to be part of the problem today. Today, I'm part of the solution. And I can call them up and just be like, what's going on? You know, and then she tell, you know, my mom's like, oh, do this. I'm like, nice, you know. And it's given me things that I didn't know I wanted. Like, I used to kind of like rip and run with my sister who's kind of close in age with me. And, you know, I have an awesome relationship with her. You know, we'll talk about the program, whatever. And I didn't know that I wanted those type of relationships. But today I wouldn't give it up, man. It makes things worthwhile. I've met my best friends in the program. You know, I always thought I had friends before, but real deal, like, we'll go to battle for you type friends. Not, you know, not literal battle, but I never experienced that. I had a whole bunch of fair weather friends, but AA has given me, you know, awesome people in my life that I can count on, and they can count on me, surprisingly, with some sobriety and working a program. But yeah, you know, put the plug in the jug, old tire say, work some steps. But yeah, the program, you know, save my butt, man, and I hope that one day, you know, I can give it back to someone in the form of sponsorship and the steps, and and experience, you know, the full cycle with it. So, thanks. I'm gonna stop. Appreciate it.
Put the plug in the jug. I'll tell you, that was really good.
Even though you didn't get the steps, it was great.
Zion.
Oh, let me turn this off.